Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hey, this is Dr. Drew, and you are listening to This Life
with Bob Forrest
and Dr. Drew.
Here we are.
Hey, welcome to another This Life podcast. Bob, how you doing?
Here we are.
Here we are, man.
So are we saying what day it is or we're not?
Sure. All right.
It's Easter Sunday,
we're
people.
We're recording this on Easter Sunday, and Bob just recovered from a series of egg hunts.
Two egg hunts in one day.
And Elvis has ranked the holidays.
Yes, he's ranked the holidays.
Elvis
Halloween,
is Bob's son.
Yeah, my five-year-old. Halloween,
number one. Nice.
Christmas, number two. Hanukkah, a close to be.
Of course.
Apparently.
Of course.
Gets to celebrate both. And then Easter is four. And I said, well, what about Thanksgiving? And I said, what about St. Patrick's Day?
Ooh.
And he's like, no, Easter bunny, candy. Easter bunny.
And he had a new theory about the Easter bunny.
Yes. So he saw the Easter bunny yesterday at Cumberland Farms, and it was the first time he realized, I guess at five and a half, that's a person in there. That's not really the Easter bunny.
The real Easter bunny is somewhere else.
Yeah, but there
right.
is a real Easter
right,
bunny.
Right.
He has a whole theory about
yeah,
it.
Yeah,
that's
him.
Half bunny, half human, that does the Easter eggs at night before Easter. But these people are just people dressing up as him to promote him.
Absolutely.
So he actually has insight at five and a half about branding.
Good for him. Hey, speaking of branding, let me remind people about
speaking
our friends.
Of branding.
Well, it's our friends at Rocky Mountain Treatment Center.
Yeah.
This is a residential program in Great Falls, Montana. I have been sort of saying Bozeman as a shorthand because that's where I know the
airport.
The
only airport. Yeah,
yeah, right. And it's actually out in the glory of Montana, Great Falls. 32 years they've been in business. You know they're up to something.
Yeah,
good.
They're doing it.
Yeah, they know what they're doing. They have a nationally, their programs are, they're one of the limited number of addiction programs, the only program in Montana to offer equine therapy, and they have a particular counselor that is licensed for the Professional Association of Therapeutic Horsemanship International. A PATH certified instructor, and again, they're very proud of that. I'm just happy. Listen, if people are interested in that, I'm all for it. But I'm interested in the sobriety, the quality of the professionals that work there, and I've vetted these people, and that's what I will stand behind. And equine therapy, as you and I have talked, is very very helpful, and people do like that as well. You know, it's people do sort of tend to mask their traumas, and I've seen situations where being in and around the equine therapy and the equine therapist breaks people through and helps them process.
It depends
some
on the therapist.
Yeah,
you know what
much,
I mean?
Very
and,
much.
And so many things go on in that. Still a lot of the 12-step community, poo-poos it. But here's the thing. An animal, and I learned this from Susie Landolfi, one of the great equine therapists here in Los Angeles, animal doesn't care what you want it to do. Right?
Right,
so it puts you in the secondary role, which
right.
all addicts need to realize. Yes. The world doesn't revolve around
that. Well, that is an important piece, really important.
and
by the way, you're out in the middle of the glory of Montana, you know, the
yeah,
Rockies
can you
and stuff.
Imagine?
It's like, come on, yeah. And, so I, you know, and again, with people that know how to do detox, know how to reinforce abstinence based, know how to process trauma, know how to connect with people, introduce to 12-step. It's all that great stuff that Bob and I stand behind thoroughly.
And plus, so. Hopefully they're far away from Bozeman Airport. Well, so you get somebody up there.
Yes.
Just don't answer their phone calls if they want to come home.
So
that's
true.
What the parents need to do.
It's so true. We went through that in one of the podcasts recently with the kid in Florida, but if you guys listened to that one. But they want to come back right when they need to stay always. And of course, they use lots of rhetoric about how horrible they are and how they don't know what they're doing and these people mistreat me. Blah, blah, blah. Anyway, so be that as it may. Bob, I want to welcome our guest today. It is Cindy Keza. Twitter handle is at Cindy_Keza.
At Medium Cindy Keza.
At Medium Cindy Keza. Is your Twitter handle, yes?
Yes.
Yeah. And Cindy is a medium, and Cindy's a friend of ours. She was an important player in my wife Susan's podcast, Calling Out. And Cindy's also tell your story.
Yeah, I'm a recovering alcoholic.
There you go.
So, yeah. I got sober May 18th of 2003.
My goodness.
So
that's a long time ago.
We sat at the breakfast table this morning, and she told me her story. You open to the whole story?
Oh, totally.
Yeah.
Open book.
She had a really interesting, it's going to break your heart when you hear the mom story. This was a really interesting piece of Cindy's history that she told me this morning. Go ahead and tell her.
Yeah, so, I was very fortunate to have a mom who was in recovery. My mom got sober when I was 3.
Wow.
So I grew up in the program, and then, I got sober. I knew where to go. I'm so fortunate. But my mom, I really had the firsthand experience of understanding and witnessing how much a relapse can ruin somebody's life so quickly and bring somebody down so quickly. Because I think as addicts, the part of the struggle is we think after some time in sobriety, oh, I've got this. But, they say in the program, your disease is just doing push-ups waiting for you to relapse, and it is always going to be worse. So, my mom was sober, got her master's degree, got her life together, was teaching at a college, and she relapsed and wound up.
What was the opening symptom that led her down the path to relapse?
So my mom.
She had what?
She had a neck trauma.
Neck pain.
Yeah.
Bob.
Yeah, that's what's going on.
Now, she had neck pain and then back pain. Now, write the script. Write the story. Well, you know exactly where it goes.
At first, was she very open about being on pills? Or she kept it a secret and was just for her to understand?
Well, she was open for a time, saying, I'm taking this medicine for my back, but then it became an addiction, and then it just went from there.
When was this? What year was this?
Got to be recent,
This was
right?
2000. My mom started taking the pills, I would say, in 2004.
So she was at the vanguard of the pandemic that we're seeing now, Bob, where eventually the doctors went, oh my God, you're a bad patient. You're an addict. Get out of here. And guess what happened?
Heroin?
Yeah.
How long from 2004 till the heroin? How long? 2 years? A year? 2 years?
Well, when the doctors, basically there were a number of doctors, because one cut her off, then she went to another, and basically the word got out, don't give this patient any more pills. And so
as opposed to get treatment for this poor woman,
right,
which drives me out of my mind.
Yeah. So in 2005, my mom attempted suicide, in which turn she was committed to a psychiatric institution instead of a rehab.
That was before heroin.
That was before the heroin, and then she got out and was, basically put on a bunch of medications, and then she was in, the system, and then the heroin started because she got it on the streets, and that was easy for her. She got it.
And, was that here in Southern California or somewhere?
It was in New Hampshire.
Yeah.
And Bernie's so, territory.
Yeah, she had
the heroin pipeline.
It's bad. Yeah. And she wound up having a couple overdoses from heroin. She didn't die from that, but she did overdose 2 or 3 times on heroin, wound up back in the psychiatric hospital, and it was just ongoing from there. So it was just a cycle. It was a horrible cycle for her of not getting the correct treatment that she needed,
How long was she sober when that
happened? Shelly was in that cycle. Remember, we talked about that.
25 years.
Isn't that heartbreaking?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's just so sad.
Yeah. And, it's sad to see, and it's powerful to witness as a recovering alcoholic myself, to see my mother having gotten so far, coming from such a dysfunctional family, coming from a lot of abuse, to make it all the way through her master's degree, to be teaching at a college, and then to go to heroin addiction, living in public housing, totally.
Did she ever process trauma? She ever get trauma treatment?
She did get trauma treatment, but at that point they had diagnosed her with severe PTSD, borderline personality, a slew of different things.
This is as an older adult?
Yeah.
I was going to say that.
So it had come to the point, and she passed away at 59.
How could you tell somebody's borderline when they're strung out on heroin like that?
It's really amazing how this whole... But what's really sad? What really broke my heart about everything was that in the psychiatric institution, they weren't treating her for addiction. They were treating her with a bunch of pills for all these different...
Yeah. Jeez, Bob, we've never seen that.
That's, you know, mental illness diagnoses. That's all they do. Hard. Yeah.
I'm telling you, Shelley, you know, Shelley, one of our treatment professionals from Celebrity Rehab, with the glasses, blonde lady, she went through the exact same thing for years before she was properly diagnosed.
Yeah. And, you know, I remember there was a time where my mom had called me. I flew to New Hampshire, and she had gone into the hospital, and she was hooked up to these machines. And I pulled the doctor aside, and I said, I need you to know this. This is an addiction. This is addiction. My mom needs the right treatment. She needs to be treated for addiction, and she's being treated incorrectly. And this really blew my mind, what happened at the hospital, because this traumatized me. So they put my mom in the room, you know, when you go to the hospital, they put you in a room. They separated me from her, and she my mom lit up a cigarette in the hospital. She's like, whatever, I'm smoking, you know. Yeah. But they tackle her and they sedate her and they take her out in handcuffs. Oh, and it's geez. Like the treatment of the patients and the misunderstanding of addiction and what's happening, it blows my mind too. It's like, what kind of people are working in these hospitals that they are so mean to people that are suffering from mental illness and addiction? It's kind of like they're like, we don't want to deal with you. We're just going to throw you in this room. We're going to treat you like crap. And then we're going to throw you in the psychiatric hospital and walk you out in handcuffs like you're a criminal.
Yeah.
You know, and it just perpetuates the cycle, you know.
So. This reminds me of when you used to go to the locked units and see
I used to see all the locked people as just addicts that were misdiagnosed. But, you know, I would say back then, a third of them were.
Oh, at least. Right? Maybe two-thirds.
Now I would say probably two-thirds of them are. Their addiction is so much a part of our society.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's just so huge. Everybody I talk to, it's just crazy.
Yeah.
It used to affect, you know, I always say, in my era, the 80s, like, who were drug addicts? Like, criminals, musicians, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And we liked it that way.
Yeah.
Now it's everybody. Now it's your grandma. Now it's, you know, your mom, my mom. Now it's everybody is on hard narcotics.
Let me take a turn. You can imagine what Cindy has been through would make her like a professional codependent, right?
Yeah.
And you can imagine dealing with an addict like that all the time would make her need to like be highly attuned intuitively to what's going on with that other person to survive, right?
Mm-hmm.
So Cindy has a really interesting career path, right? Her Twitter handle is at Median Cindy Kaza.
Median,
right?
Cindy Kaza. Median. Yep.
Median
Cindy. That's all right.
And she became a psychic medium. And we were talking this morning about what it is she's doing, and we sort of agreed that it's using intuition to sort of tune into maybe things in other people. Talk about it.
Well, Bob. Yeah. And that's,
Bob, I bet you had questions. I knew you might fascinate
heal,
you.
To heal people,
and,
right?
You know, also as a child, because, you know, my mom did have psychological problems, but as a child, you know, you have to be very, very attuned to what's going on in your environment.
Think
so
she was
you
a borderline?
Feel,
think
I
she
do.
Was a borderline when she, see, that's the sense I got in
I
my
do.
Intuition. You okay. were just getting going with well, the 48-year-old diagnosis.
Right.
No, this woman was borderline from the get-go.
That's okay. It made my borderline, whatever. I mean, that's fine.
But
she had it as we often see sometimes, the program kind of keeps her glued together.
Right? Yeah, and you know, I think this is very common that children that come from families with addiction or mental illness, that you as a child have to be very, very intuitive to
survive.
Because you can sense the fluctuation in energy around you, or okay, now today's not a good day for her. I can feel that, and it just becomes a part of survival. Absolutely.
Do you have a thing? I have a thing where I've come.
You know, I just realized we're three people who know what we're talking in code to a certain extent. Borderline personality disorder, which is not talked about when you read the DSM-5. Hopeless, never curable.
Yeah,
you know, talk
the worst
like the
thing
only
you
solution.
Could ever have in life.
Dialectical behavioral therapy.
And but lots of people have it, and lots of people get functional.
Yes.
I'm not going to say they get whole or better.
Borderline
or stops. They just get functional, and they understand themselves. Yeah. I have a lot of borderline friends. You know, and Shelley was diagnosed with that long ago. Jennifer, you know, there's a lot of people, and when you get diagnosed with it, I think the professionals who know what it is think in terms of, oh my God, this is,
this
know,
is like
always
the worst.
Be
yeah,
this
it's
way.
The worst.
And it's not. You gotta be in their face all the time. He says you have to have a good boundary. I think you need to get in their face all the time.
Well, just the way, I can see where that's a good thing too, but just the way narcissism traits are so common today, borderline traits are very common today.
Yeah.
They're very
Donald
common.
Trump has a lot of them.
He's not borderline, but...
He's always a narcissist. He's always innocent of everything, you know, and the chaos is all around him and he's innocent. That's one of the things I always think of when I think of borderline.
Oh, that's interesting.
You know what I mean?
That's because they project it all out into the world. yeah. That's called projective identification. So yeah. It's very interesting.
So yeah, I do see all the personality problems in our society. But if you grew up with it, which I grew up with it, you just know intuitively who has it, how to deal with it. Mm-hmm. Right. And mine is, a lot of borderline complain about stuff all the time. And I go, who cares? Nobody fucking cares. Mm-hmm. Just to right in their face. Nobody cares, Mom. Nobody cares.
Yeah.
Why do you know what I mean? Because part of the whole center of the universe is that, you know, everybody's so concerned with their little poo butt problems.
But it's interesting. You know what I mean? But Cindy and I would argue. You said something once that really caught my attention. You said there's some people that experience themselves internally first and then other people secondarily. Yeah. People like Cindy and me experience ourselves through other people. We're zeroing in on every little muscle in your face. You do this stuff?
Yeah.
Yeah, I do it too. And we react. Our experience of self is deeply affected by
the... So you're going to get sucked into the vortex pretty easily you don't know to not get in.
Yeah.
And then do you feel like a bat... When you were feeling yourself sucked in with your mother, did you that then when you just had to get away and you don't want
guilty.
To talk to her,
oh,
you feel
the worst
guilty,
guilt
right?
Ever. And you know, a part of the story too is, and this is really something that I've had to deal with. My mom passed away in 2013, and it got to the point with her addiction and her mental illness where I didn't necessarily have the tools now to cope with setting boundaries that I do today. And so it became so extreme with her that I said, I can't talk to you anymore. I need you to get out of my life.
That's actually okay. That's an okay way.
Well, but she, it and killed she, her to say know, that.
It did, and it was painful. And then for 2 years, I didn't talk to her, and she passed away, and I hadn't spoken to her during that time. But I know, looking back, I said, you know, that was the decision I had to make for myself, because every time I became so attached to her drama and her story, it took me down with her. And I had to get to that point where I had to set that extreme boundary.
One
you know?
Person survived. Thank goodness.
Yeah.
The other wasn't going to survive.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You could have gone down with her either.
Yeah. And
frankly, the only chance she has is people leaving and setting boundaries and stuff.
You just said something. One of the great psychiatrists we worked with at Las Encinas for 30 years. Yeah. Borderline common patient that we had. And I was kind of upset by the doctor's boundary with her and kind of this distance. And I said, you ever think about her or whatever? And he goes, listen, the only thing surprising about that case is that not that she died, that she lived so long.
Yeah,
I'm surprised
with
my mom.
That's how deadly personality problems can be.
But people don't think about mental health issues that way. It's very similar to, psychiatrists can make prognostic predictions much the way an oncologist can about cancer. It's not.
See, America's not ready for that.
No, I know.
Yet.
I know. That's why we get blamed for stuff. You don't. Yeah. You know, that doesn't cross people's mind. Now, I don't want. Now, I'm hopeful for. Just so I'm hopeful for the vast, vast, vast majority of cancer patients. I'm very hopeful for the vast, vast, vast majority of drug addicts. But there are certain situations. I mean, these are. You know, there's at least potential for fatality a lot of the time.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of the time.
Well, they say in AA, your three options are incarceration, insanity, or death. Those are your three options in a relapse if you don't stay sober.
But I'm wondering if you have any questions for her about how she tunes into stuff. And just a whole different topic for us to go down.
I think it's, you can just sense. Here's the thing with mediums, because I love that world and I love the
mystery. Well, you have the ability yourself, I'm sorry, you know?
But I see it in the stuff I've been involved with Susan a couple times. It is so healing just to hear a narrative. It doesn't have to be the absolute truth, because there is no truth anymore. But you know what I mean? But the narrative that you need to take care of you and your departed mom or brother or sister, somebody you felt you betrayed before they died, they're okay with it. Those are healing things that people, you know what I'm saying?
Yes, I do. But I don't get the sense that you would say that unless you felt something.
Well, you would feel a healing or a forgiveness.
Yeah, I think I would argue that Cindy would tune into something. Let's say we're talking to you. In you, that would have her conclude that that person, as she experienced that intuition, would in fact forgive you, but you can't let go. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Well, so in the work,
you're
right,
helping the person. Yeah.
But she's not doing it gratuitously. She actually feels that person would do so.
Right. And so, and oftentimes, the most healing messages I find are when people, you're doing the work as a medium and people come through on the other side where there's this highly dysfunctional relationship in the living, and the person on the other side is seeing it more clearly, the perspective of what happened when they were here, to say, look, it's okay. There's no anger left. There's no resentment. And because they want us to heal, because we in this life, in this plane of reality, we hold on to all these things and it eats us alive, and that's dangerous, right? Because we can't heal ourselves sometimes. So to have that message, I think, is so profound, and that helps people heal tremendously. You know,
I really do believe it starts a new brain pathway.
Yeah,
this one's Cindy's been running all over the world trying to study all this stuff, all the different ways different cultures do these things. Very interesting. Mm-hmm. It's very, very interesting.
And there's another thing that's happened. There were some deaths in my life that I felt contributed, I should have done more, all the kind of stuff you might have felt with your mom. As you get older, you just got to be able to let those things go. And I think that people can't. People hold on to them for decades sometimes.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, till their own death, yeah.
Till their own death,
and
yeah.
And it's difficult, right? It's very difficult to feel that way in this lifetime, because when people get a reading, a mediumistic reading, and the medium says you don't have to hold on to that, it is a release for a lot of people, you know, if they can allow the release to really happen. But we have to forgive ourselves. That's the one thing that I've learned too. It's like we hold on to this stuff, but really we have to forgive ourselves in this lifetime, you know?
What do you think she's doing when she does that? Do you have any theories?
I think that the brain thinks in terms of shame, and you're just stuck.
No, but I mean, what is she picking up on? What does she do?
About the person?
Yeah, what do you think?
You mean the process of mediumship?
What's your theory?
It's just an intuition. I think that...
So we have this right brain that is more bird and animal than anything else, and it attunes to something.
Yeah,
okay.
And, you know, I think it's interesting, and I'm certainly not a neurologist, but studying the brain, the lizard brain, primitive brain, it's fight or flight. It's responding to stimuli.
You and
right?
I were talking about this before. The mic's heated up, and we're going to talk about panic after the break.
Yeah.
A quick break. Be right back. I want to remind people that today's episode is courtesy of Rocky Mountain Treatment Center. They're in Montana. And if you've been listening to anything that Bob and I have been talking about over the years, you know that we're very particular about an addiction treatment. We don't take recommendations lightly, so we've looked into these guys pretty carefully. And the Rocky Mountain Treatment Center happens to be one I am able to recommend, and I'm happy to do so. They focus on individualized treatment of the patients, including their entire well-being based on a biopsychosocial model. This is what Bob and I have done for years and years. They don't just look at addiction. They look at the psychiatric issues, the psychological issues, the trauma issues, all aspects of the physical and mental health. And of course, you've heard me stress the importance of this for long-term success. There's staying sober, but there's what I call real recovery, which is dealing with all the risk factors that set people up for bad addiction. They're in Great Falls, Montana. It's a 26-bed facility surrounded by amazing Montana landscape. Patients can have a range of recreational therapies, including equine therapy. For more information on Rocky Mountain Treatment Center, click on their banner on the thislifepodcast.com website or at drdrew.com, or visit their site at rocky.rehab. That is simply rocky.rehab. Hey, everybody, welcome back to This Life Podcast.
We're back.
And as I said, I liked how Cindy framed everything as this life, well, this life, well, this life. Yeah. Speaking of this life, go to the thislifepodcast.com website. Support the podcast by clicking through the Amazon banner there. And, of course, support the products that are represented there. And also, you can get this all at drdrew.com. The same applies there. We need your help to keep this thing going.
Yeah,
we need your support. So please do. It doesn't cost you a thing to click through on that Amazon banner, but they kick us over a little bit, and we can then continue to pay poor Nate to run the board.
You know, who listens to this show is a lot of my clients right now is parents, and it's so funny, you know, about your intuition about people. I think you have intuition about things, and people are so similar too. So I was talking about this kid a couple weeks ago on a podcast, and this mother was sure I was talking about her kid, and I absolutely was not.
Oh, no.
But drug addict stories are so similar.
They're so similar.
And their relationships with their parents are so identical.
And I would say, but listen, as a physician, you need to know that that's the very basis of medicine. We look at these processes that are repetitive, and we categorize them into groups. We call those diagnoses. And then we go study what's underlying that, and we understand that it's all caused by a common thing. And in, you know, maybe an infectious disease, it's an infectious agent. In our world, it's trauma and a substance, you know, or
codependency, whatever, but
the human piece, that's why we as doctors know when we see it. We can walk in the room and go, oh, I know what this is, because we've seen it 100 or 1,000 times before. And there are unusual but no unique cases.
The people you see that come to you that want to be released from this guilt and this shame, they must have similar, you know, kind of narratives, and you can read them like they just want forgiveness, like what you said, right?
Yeah.
And they want to let go of that shame.
And it's a very common experience for human beings to have. And a lot of people, I mean, I don't know very many families that aren't dysfunctional. There's always some level maybe of dysfunctional
in America.
I mean, I'm not saying every person, because I can't say everybody, but they're
50%.
And, you know, and there's always, even if the relationship between, for example, the parent and the child wasn't horrible, sometimes the child still feels guilt that the parent, did I do enough before they died? Did I do enough?
Always.
There's always something. Yeah.
Speaking of this,
we're ill prepared for death in this country.
That's
but
true.
I said that early on when in my career. I gave up on that one.
Okay. All right, so
wait. So I want Cindy to talk about her travels and what she's learned about. You know, she's been through so many amazing things, and she's chronicled a lot of it on video. I'd love it to go to television sometime on like Vice or something. It'd be fantastic. And
going and meeting healers and psychics.
Yeah, and you know what's so. I mean, first of all, mediumship and psychic ability, it's innately human. I believe that every human being has this ability to agree. I always say everyone can play the piano. Maybe not everybody's going to be a concert pianist. But I really wanted to explore how mediumship and psychic ability exist cross-culturally, across all religions, because it's part of being a human being. So most of my time I've spent in Indonesia working with healers and mediums there. And on this topic of how in America, we treat a lot of things with medication. It's like, take the pill, right? And I'm guilty of that. You know, I mean, it's when you get a cold, you're like, I want a Z-Pack right now. I don't want to deal with the
Drew's
pain of the
told
cold.
Me
you know?
Sometimes if I give you a Z-Pack, that's not what you have. It won't work. I say, I want it anyway.
I know, exactly, right? And then you go to, in Indonesia, what I've experienced is actually the opposite. You know, the healers I meet, that's the last thing they do at first. They'll say, here, let me try to heal you with this energy healing, drink this tonic elixir of whatever they're mixing different, you know, herbs together, meditation, prayer. They oftentimes look at illness as a spiritual problem first.
But I would argue that's great.
It's dangerous.
Well, no. I'm gonna say if you first, you know, are medically cleared, it then you go to this.
Yes.
But I would argue that one of their key qualities is a caretaking frame. They bring you into a frame.
They talk to you.
Yeah. And that is healing. It heals our brain.
Yeah.
And we've lost that. Our systems do not tolerate any of that. We don't even tolerate that in our families.
Yeah.
Think about that. That's how far down the road we've gone.
And I know my friends who I've done, I filmed him a lot. His name is Kia Genghis Moya,
Say that again backwards?
He's a spiritual consultant, but I remember talking to him. He's like, oh, I have a sinus infection. Oh, I'm like, I have some medicine from America. You want to take this? He's like, no. He's like, I'm just going to fight it out. Like, I don't want your pills.
By the way, 95% of sinus infections should not be treated with antibiotics.
And he won't take them. He's like, no, I don't want the pills. I'm just going to fight it out, you know?
Yeah. Another one is healthy young person should not... I've lost my wind. Well,
that's an actual fact that we as a society... Now, here's an interesting thing. Everybody's in Cuba right now, friends of mine.
Yeah.
Very little...
Rolling Stones?
Little to no...
Rolling Stones?
Yeah,
with them?
Little to
Are
no...
Are the Stones your friend?
Little bit, but I know that circle of people, and they're having like an economic summit down there.
Ugh.
So little to no crime, 100% health and wellness program.
Bob, stop. I've been to Cuba. I've looked into their healthcare system. And they literally say, when you go there, they go, we have everything you need. Like, I got my grandma last week. She needed Tylenol. They made sure, they figured out a way to get her some Tylenol. It is horrible. You have no idea how deprived it is down there. They have little rest of areas they use as showcases, and they send their doctors around who are pretty well trained and sort of show off. The actuality of what they deliver is horrific. You can't get Tylenol. They made a big deal when we were down there that they could arrange Tylenol.
We were just talking about how not everybody needs Tylenol. Now we're arguing that cultures all need Tylenol.
The point is you couldn't. It is bare bones.
Is there health and wellness programs there?
Bare bones.
Is there education about health and wellness?
Did not see anything like
that. Is there 100% literacy?
Didn't see that either, is there? I don't know.
That's what the claims are.
I mean, it was bad when we were there. It was only, 10 years ago we were there?
Yeah, and they only go to school until they're in the third grade or something, and then they're out in the fields picking tobacco.
It was intense, and it was a mess. But I'm sure it's getting better, and I don't want to disparage anybody, but we saw it firsthand. And the way they thought about things, they would talk about the glory and then talk about, and then here's what's glorious. And we'd go, oh, Jesus. They gave us the best meal they had in Havana. It was bologna and potato chips. And that was at the Havana Club, which is a beautiful place, but no one's allowed to go there. And everything was just broken down. I mean, broken down that you can't imagine, like Atlantis going into the ocean. But now we'll see that come
back.
Were
the people happy?
Yeah. And I'll tell you where they nailed it, where they absolutely nailed it, was in the arts. They have sort of unlimited funding for the arts. So if you wanted to be a musician or a ballerina, it is game
but
on.
Just,
that's
but
awesome.
They just nailed
art
it.
Art is so healing.
So people were seemingly satisfied, happy, a lack of anxiety, a lack of stress.
I would argue I saw more of that kind of health in the outback of Costa Rica. People living on hut
Another
floors.
Another place with severe poverty.
I see that
poverty.
In Indonesia,
yeah,
though.
People
in
would,
Indonesia.
But, and I, when I looked at that and saw that, I was sort of like, whoa, what am I seeing? And I thought, oh, I'm seeing families that are together.
That's what it is. Yeah. And I was talking to somebody about this the other day, and I was like, you know why I love going to Indonesia so much is because there's such a sense of community there.
Yeah.
People help each other.
Family community. And Cuba did have a big dose of that.
Yep.
And so I would argue that.
Happiness.
I don't know those happiness because
well,
it was pretty,
you
pretty
call,
tough. There.
Whatever you want to call it, did the people seem more whole, less stressed, less anxious, less traumatized?
No. Well, no. I've seen that. I've seen that. And you've
in
seen
certain
that too.
Cultures.
Yeah, I've seen that in certain, in poverty, I've seen that.
Because what
That's
we're going to be
point.
Able to do
That's
is, Cuba's going to become the United States in 5 years.
Yeah,
there's going to be Walmarts and gas stations and capitalism.
Yeah. Well, we'll see what happens.
The yin yang and see and you watch. The families will break apart. Oof. People want to go live in America. They'll have different kind of economic systems within Havana. They'll have the poor people and the middle class people and the rich people. And that is what causes stress. And I said this because Chrissy and I were talking, right? I have a chair in Laguna Beach that I'm going to go sit in and I'm going to wake up tomorrow and have my coffee in. It has the most beautiful view of Laguna, right? It's my most peaceful place in my weekend time, right? Mm. I look forward to going there. But what it takes to have that place in this part of the world, that chair sitting looking there, is so much stress and so much economics and so much driving to Temecula and Malibu and working. And I realize that in these in Indonesia, in Cuba, in wherever you were in the outback of Costa Rica, they have their chair. And it doesn't matter where it is.
Yeah, and you know, I want to say this too. What I really, really find powerful about the time I've spent over there is that it's such a spiritual country. When people are...
It's not Indonesia we're talking about.
Indonesia. Mm-hmm. When people don't have a lot of, you know, money or they don't have a lot of material possessions, I find the sense of community is stronger and the sense of spirituality is so strong. And that creates a sense of peace and happiness that I think a lot of Americans are lacking because we're so focused on being individuals, making money, our jobs, go, 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 go.
To have the chair, but it's all to have the chair.
It's all to have the chair, but the chair's everywhere. We just look other places to find
the chair. We just need to get
the chairs,
Drew. We'll put them side by side and sit somewhere.
Yeah, yeah. No, I'm up for that.
But really, it is that peace and that spirit and that place, right?
But I bet, I'm thinking, this is an interesting thought. I've never really had this thought before. I bet there are people who feel inundated by those spiritual messages who are as unhappy with the spiritual sort of emphasis as we are, or some of us are unhappy with the individualist. You know what
Possible.
I mean? Humans are never all happy with everything.
Never. There's no such thing as altruism. Because like, it does not exist.
Well, I think altruism, well, not pure altruism, I think you're right, but I think we're wired for a certain amount of it, because that's why the species is so social and survives so much. But like, I'm pretty happy with things. I could appreciate all that. I'd like a chair, but I don't disdain how this country works.
I think I've become... I'm trying to copy you, though. So I'm running late here. I text these. What did I text? I'm 7 minutes away.
Yes,
not,
well done.
Like, well done. But that's just being you.
It's easy. It's easy to do that. That's not so hard.
I'm driving from one place to the other.
That's right.
No, I got to prognosticate. Wait, 7 minutes.
Susan wants to go.
No, that's great, because when an addict is late, I'm always like, oh my God, oh my God.
Oh my God. Was that an Easter egg?
Yeah, exactly. But you know, I like that, Bob. I love that. Thank you.
Everybody that's sitting on this couch right now, and Susan too, we all work in the field of helping other people. So yeah. I think that's such a key part of finding happiness in this lifetime.
Totally agree. And you can do that in any culture with any emphasis.
Yeah.
I mean, you get nice that we get to, you know, it'd be nice if we could more find our emphasis in this culture.
Yeah.
Than be sort
but
of.
But I wonder, did they know how to die in Indonesia? They do, don't they? They prepare for death. Yeah. Death is a part of life,
they're not as afraid
right?
of death, from my experience. Yeah.
But that's where I was going to go with this, too, because they do die, and they die relatively young, and they don't have great health care and stuff. And so they get our denial of death is a problem.
Mm-hmm.
I think it affects our mental health during our lifetime.
I agree.
Yeah. So let me do another, speaking of mental health, here's a woman that was horribly abused in her childhood, sexually abused, emotionally abused, physically abused. This is interesting. She went to three kids, three different dads, and she went to a shelter where they supported her. She was probably in a violent relationship or something. I don't know this, but I'm guessing. And she actually became a mentor there, and then somehow things turned on her, and this ended up being more traumatic than anything else. So this kind of goes, we don't know what happened, and I don't want to point fingers at anybody, but it does go at the fact how people get engaged in traumatic reenactments wherever they go.
And they'll make it happen, yeah.
Yeah, and so you have to learn how to own that. I'm not saying it's okay. I'm not saying it didn't happen to you. I'm not saying anything. I'm saying, how does you not let that happen ever again?
Well, and that's part of recognizing the pattern.
Yep. So any thoughts on that?
Yeah. So, that's happened to me where, you know, you're going through this cycle of recovery or not a cycle, but, you know, you're in your recovery. You think you're healing. And then, I've still attracted these situations into my life. I'm like, how did I do that again? Why?
Is.
I thought I was healed. I thought I was together, you know, but I think it's just part of recognizing the pattern and saying, okay, I recognize this happened again. What do I need to change about myself? Instead of blaming everybody else, what do I need to change about myself to stop attracting these situations into my life, but also to not beat myself up about it, because of my childhood and my addiction and all that stuff, I'm bound to attract addicts into my life. We talked about that, you know, and yeah.
We gotta take another quick break, right back.
I do.
Hey, this is Dr. Drew. This is the This Life podcast. Bob Forrest.
We're back.
And Cindy Kay is our guest today. We're talking about childhood trauma stuff.
So are we going to give me a reading?
Yes, we are. But hold on, one quick thing. She was talking before the break about the patterns that we just keep doing in our lives. Even we've had treatment and we're good. I took a Rorschach test. Did I tell you about this?
Recently?
Yeah. No, about Judy Ho, someone who contributed to HLN, gave me a Rorschach test about 3 months ago.
Really?
Do you know about this? It's hysterical. You will feel vindicated.
What'd
by
you
this,
see in
my
that?
Wife. Well, I think I've had so much therapy, and I think I'm so evolved, so much better. All my personality quirks are, all my old personality stuff showed up on the Rorschach. I'm like, shit, it's all that crap is still there.
I know.
It's still there. I must be dealing with it totally differently, but the personality stuff just stays. It just, and that's what theoreticians say.
Yeah.
It's just in us, and you can change how you manage and regulate and all this other stuff, and that's critical to it being livable, whatever's in your personality. But God damn it.
How much it owns
you. I was like, God, that was me 10 years ago, 15 years ago, before therapy, that was me. But all right, still in me. There
That's
you go.
Crazy.
I think to change how...
You and your antisocial stuff
Yeah, I got to take the MMPI again.
Well, I know for me, like what's been pivotal for me in my life right now is how I respond to situations. I've tried to not respond, so, you know, out of my anxiety and working on that, because I'm going to attract some of the same stuff.
It's just going to happen.
But
yeah,
it's just
okay.
How
yeah,
I respond to
it's
it.
It's got to be,
you know?
Okay. You got to be conscious of it, aware of it.
I just think about myself. Insight still doesn't mean change.
Oh, absolutely true.
Right?
100%.
And so I think in our 12-step world, insight is taken for granted as change.
Yeah,
and
it's hard
to change.
There's graves misconceptions.
It's hard to gain insight.
Graves misconceptions that insight is going to change you, or that discharging an emotion is going to release it. It just makes it worse many times. But anyway, so I want Cindy to do a little mini read on you. That's what we're going to do here.
Oh boy, let me switch gears.
No, I know it's hard. It's not fair. I'm sorry.
No, it's okay. Let me just, you know.
I've had a lot of death.
I want to talk about your dad first.
Yeah.
Your father would be on the other side. Am I right about that?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because I know very much that's the first man who steps in. And I know your father must have been somebody who also struggled with his own personality disorders. Am I right about that?
Some of the same ones.
Because I see him getting very angry at times.
Oh, yeah.
I see him being aggressive. I see him being angry in this lifetime, right? When he was here.
Yeah, yeah.
And I see him being somebody who also didn't want to deal with his demons, is how he's putting it to me, right?
Yeah.
Because he thought that it's almost as if he felt like this is life, this is what happens, I don't need to change, I don't want to change. But I know his childhood was difficult too. It's a cycle in your family, yeah?
Yeah, yeah.
But your father shows me that he really, really just didn't understand how to cope. That's what I feel with him. Mm-hmm. Did he actually have alcoholism, your father?
Yeah, yeah. Because
I know he battled the booze.
Mm-hmm.
And I know...
Did he call it booze?
Yeah, everybody did.
I battled the booze, is what he's saying. The booze got me.
Yeah.
And I see him being a hard liquor drinker, too. Yeah.
That slowed down later in life.
But yeah. I want you to know, your father, first of all mediums say this, but it's the truth, is so proud of you because you're so courageous. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I know, would you also have an uncle that's on the other side as well?
Yeah,
your father's brother, is that right?
Yeah.
They would be together. They came from a family of just dysfunction. Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you know who? Sorry. And there you do have a lot of people over there. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Whoa! It's like they're just like the storm is coming in. No, it's the perfect storm. but let me tell you about first your uncle's there, and your mother must be over there too.
Yeah.
There, she's here. And do you know who?
They don't get along very good.
It doesn't matter. All things are healed on the other side.
Is it all healed?
I believe that. Okay. I believe that. But I want to go back to, now I want to talk about your mom, because I know they're all here. But would you understand, and I know you said they didn't get along, but would you understand your mom being very codependent with your father? Because I see them arguing, but I also see there must have been some, if I'm correct, extramarital stuff going on.
Maybe.
But what I want to say is they're fine over there. And do you know who, I know Susan's mom's name is Patty, but do you know who Trisha is, or Trish by chance?
Patricia.
There can be somebody in the living that has that name.
In the living?
Do you know who Trish? Trish went by Trish specifically?
No.
Susan, do you know what Trish? Did your mom go by Trish, or was it Patty?
I know Trish.
You know a Trish?
Mm-hmm.
On the other side or in the living? Trish.
Yeah.
Okay, sorry. Because I'm hearing Trish, Trish, Trish. So let me just step that away for a second. But what the message really is from your parents is just how courageous you are, and that honestly, it's like they're amazed. They're amazed at the progress you've made. And your dad shows me in his lifetime that... Did your father, before he passed away, did he have dementia? Or do you know who had dementia? Is that right?
Well, he is kind of going crazy, yeah.
Because I see him not having his memory completely.
Yeah,
I see
him
not being able to remember things or not recognizing faces.
Well, Drew can
it's
read
like,
that. He stopped taking his blood thinning medicine after having open heart surgery because he wanted to die.
Oh.
So that, you know what that's like.
Yeah.
And he
having strokes.
So his mind, he's just shown me his memory must have been fading. He can't remember.
Yeah.
And he also talks about
it was hideous to watch, just so you know.
He's healed on the other side,
yeah,
that
I'm
can
sure.
assure you, but his mind is healed, and He also is explaining something about somebody who would have had wartime experience. Is that your father?
They all did.
Because yeah. I know I was in the war. I had wartime experience.
My uncle had big time war.
And PTSD maybe from that, the wartime experience. And there's also somebody who took their own life on the other side that you would know as well. I see it by, honestly, I feel like there's, who are you? Do you understand a woman who committed suicide with a pill overdose, if I'm right, where I've took too many pills?
Well, I don't think it was an overdose, but she died of that. Yeah,
pills.
My aunt, yeah.
Okay. Cause,
but my dad's best friend killed himself, and I found the body.
I know that this is the woman who had the pills. I feel like it's an overdose.
My auntie Momo.
And so She's showing me too, though. I feel like, honestly, with her pill problem, the addiction, she shows me I'm on more than one pill. I feel she's got this concoction of things going
morphine
on.
Morphine too,
and it's all mixing together.
Oh yeah.
And that's what took her. And do you know who Margaret is as well? The name Margaret.
Yeah, that's my mom's side of the family.
Okay, because I've got Margaret and I've got Jane as well.
That's my sister's name.
Yeah. Mm. So, but you know. So much power to you because you've helped so many people. And also, have you ever thought about writing like a children's book for children going through, coming from dysfunctional families?
No, but that's a good idea.
That's a great idea.
Because it has to do with
you. No one's really done that.
Yeah, no one's done that. Why don't we do that?
Why don't you do it? I'm happy to do it.
No, I'm not kidding.
I need it on drdrew.com.
I'll help you.
No, it really, I know, you know, the book writing and stuff.
Is my dad trying to make up for leaving by giving me a good idea?
I'm serious. And you know what it is? It's like a book with pictures. It's a legit children's book, but it talks about all
my
these different aspects.
My dad's an alcoholic or something. My dad drinks too much, something like that.
And do you know somebody named... I have Jenny, or I heard Jenny and Penny. I heard them both, which is...
Oh, my God. That's Jennifer Ketchum.
Yeah, yeah. There's two Jenny. Yeah.
Well, Jennifer Ketchum goes by Penny.
Oh.
She did.
She's a friend
Jenny
of ours. Yeah.
Oh, she's alive.
Alive, yeah.
Jenny, Penny. Oh, she goes by Penny. Interesting.
Yeah.
No, she
did.
Goes by Jenny.
She had a whole other life as Penny, but she's
Jennifer
now.
That's interesting. Okay, she's still here. So let me just acknowledge, I've got to figure out why
these people
I'm hearing
that
she's become, you know what? She reminds me of me, kind of, Jenny does.
No
and we
kidding.
Lived in the same apartment, remember?
Yeah.
She's taking the same track as me. She's going back to school. She's reinventing herself.
I see that. She wasn't so...
I think about that all the time.
I never experienced her as so antisocial, but you're right, she was. She wanted to fuck with us all the time. I mean, she really wanted to screw us up. You know what I mean? She had that whole...
I'm the only one that remains antisocial. And she, in wellness.
No, but listen, she was very impressed when her psychiatrist said, you're a scammer. You're a little
criminal.
Schemer.
Little criminal.
She thought, oh, yeah, he knows me.
She was on a previous episode, too.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. But what should we do with these people that are alive that you keep your calling
Who did
out?
I say first? What was the
Jenny
name?
Jenny or Penny.
Jenny or Penny, but there's somebody before
Trisha.
That. Trisha. Okay. Yeah. So for Jenny, do you know if Jenny's mother has passed away by chance?
Don't know.
Does anybody know?
She didn't have contact with her dad, or now she
is. Yeah, I don't know.
Should I text her?
No, let me just say this because I hate to say somebody's on the other side when they're not, and simply I could be acknowledging her mom. And what I want to say is just there's love and healing around that situation.
Okay,
so I'll put that there
because
I can't get the validation.
Jenny, that's true of Jenny's life generally. So I
okay, and also what I want to say about her is you know you mentioned her going back to school, right?
Yeah.
But they're still going back to that child psychology. Like, it's very... It's coming
who are we talking
back.
About? Who? What?
Jenny
Penny.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
So, it's the child psychology, but maybe you could collaborate with her somehow.
Oh, that's a
book.
Great idea.
She could help you write the book, Bob.
That's a great idea.
Yeah.
Good idea.
That's a great idea.
And she's a great writer. She's a wonderful writer.
Then that's maybe where
and
that's
I'm
coming
not.
In.
Yeah. And I'm not, but I'm a good
but
ideas guy.
But you're an artist, and you
an
have the creative
guy.
Aspect.
Yes, there you go.
And there could also be, like, a music... Something with music therapy, like a CD connected to it somehow, or that could have been.
What a great idea.
Yeah.
And then with Trish, Trish was somebody who was on the show as well?
No.
Okay. That's a friend of yours,
yes.
Trish. Okay, what I want to say, what I'm feeling immediately is talking about Trish, and I feel like her father would be on the other side. Is that correct?
True.
So her father comes through just to say hi, and there's a happy birthday around the family somewhere.
Mom,
and
Trish, just had it.
So happy birthday, and that's there, the quick message. There you go. Yeah.
Crazy. Wow. What is that? Wow. What
they're
did she do?
Through. They're just coming through.
And if you want to hear more of Cindy Kaza, listen to Calling Out with Susan Pinsky.
She just decided to resurrect her podcast based on Cindy's
And do you know who Fred is, or Freddie is by chance?
Freddie. Yeah, I know some Fred's on this side or on the other side.
On the other side. Is there a Fred over there? Fred?
Not in my life, I don't think.
Oh, you do? Well, there you go.
I'm sitting behind Bob, so they always kind of move
I know Fred's in this life, too.
But it's on the... You know a Fred on the other side, Susan?
Yeah.
There you go.
Okay.
Hi from Fred. There
He's my great-grandfather.
Oh, wow.
Fantastic. Oh, by the way, you got to get those... Why? Okay. No, I'm going to...
It's for Susan?
Yes. Quickly. And I'll tie it up with this. If it's your great-great-grandfather, Fred, what he's showing me is that he wants you to do the genealogy test again. Did you do the genealogy swab ever where you did the, what's it called?
But we have not done that.
He wants you to do it because you'll be really amazed at what you discover. I know you have roots, where was it, in the Czech or something?
Yes.
Yeah.
But you also have roots, it's in
Neanderthals.
In Holland. do you have roots in Holland? Are you aware of that?
We don't know. That would make
sense.
Well,
I don't really know a lot about them before they came to the United
States.
Yeah,
your mom might have Holland Dutch.
So check it out. You'll be amazed by that.
Go online, get it.
Get it. Yeah. What's it called? The swab? It's called.
There's various ones out there.
Well, 26andMe.
Yeah.
26 and
I
me.
Was able to trace Fred back to New York. He was like in the turn of the century or before that, like way before that. But I didn't know.
Let's do the genetic.
When they came over to
you'd be surprised how much Neanderthal we have in us.
I'm not really sure.
You heard about the Bill Maher did it, and Bill Maher and somebody else. Bill Maher and.
Somebody hates.
Rush Limbaugh are related. Bill Maher and Bill O'Reilly. Bill Maher and Bill O'Reilly are blood relatives.
That's awesome.
I bet they didn't see that one coming.
Wow, that would be so weird.
All right, anything for me before you go?
Oh, let's see. Okay. Okay. Okay, so what am I picking up on you? Do you want to talk about people on the other side, or do you want to talk about your life now?
Life now.
Okay, that's what I thought. Now... Honestly, I do know some about you, but your singing career is just going to skyrocket after this TMZ thing. That is what I'm seeing. I see a full album coming. I see you getting a record deal. I see it all just coming out.
Hysterical.
It's coming out. No.
too funny.
Okay, Cindy's funny too.
I'm a comedian, right? No.
Yeah, she is.
Comedian.
Now I want to talk about, because I know you have TV stuff. I don't even want to talk about that. I want to actually go into you opening up your own treatment center with another group, but it feels small. Like, do you have an outpatient or like a halfway house? Have you ever gone into business with somebody?
Bob and I have talked about doing that.
Yeah. That's where it is.
We don't want to do that though.
Well, let me just say this. I know it seems like a daunting task. It's like so many risks involved. Oh. I don't want to get sued. I don't want to deal with this, right? That's what I'm hearing.
That's what he says every day.
It's just so much. The work is so intense. Liability is so high.
Yeah.
Okay, let her keep going.
All right.
But what I want to say is this. It's an outpatient, like halfway house treatment center. But what I see happening in this treatment center, outpatient, is there you incorporating not only proper East Western medical advice, but also there's Eastern, there's meditation, there's art, there's painting, there's things that work with both aspects of the healing to get to the mind-body connection. It's not traditional. Yeah. Yoga, there's like so many things happening with that. I feel like it's going to be, honestly, in the future, maybe it might take about 5 years. I mean, it's out, but I see it being
possible.
It's going
to take me 10 years to talk about it.
No, I see it being possible, but I also see it being somewhere where I feel like I'm almost on a beach or I'm somewhere.
Oh, well, that makes sense.
Somewhere.
In retirement, I could see doing something like that.
So don't be afraid to do it. It's not happening right now, but please don't let go of that idea. I know it seems scary, but it's something that I really see
I know it would help. I know it would do a lot of good. So that, and I can't let go of that thought.
So we're moving to Laguna.
Laguna, baby.
I gotta be honest with you, it doesn't even feel like I'm in the United States.
We could not get sued.
Well, that's true. You can go to
I feel like I'm in Puerto
Wait
Rico.
Wait a minute, Drew.
Puerto Rico is the United States.
You love Costa Rica.
Let's go to the British Virgin
Puerto
Islands.
Puerto Rico is the United States, but it's somewhere not in the U.S. here. You
Interesting.
Know.
Cool.
We'll work with Eric Clapton.
Yeah,
his
go
whole
to Cross.
Ah, hey, why not?
I could work.
Why not?
That.
Why not?
I could go
right.
In that direction.
But I have to keep saying this: the fear. Of
why
being,
do I feel guilty if we would go do that? Like we're not supposed. We're not.
Because
you're
it,
not
because
supposed
it,
to be
you know
that
why?
Happy and that content and
no.
live in that beautiful place.
No, because it feels. You know why? It feels high end. And you and I just like working with regular people.
That's
and that's a problem for us.
But you know what I think? I wouldn't look at it high end because that's not even where I'm going with it. It feels like it won't be high end. It feels like it will be accessible for people that don't have a lot of money because you'll get sponsorship.
So Bill Gates will come in and
from yeah. other people.
Well, that would.
And let me just say this too. This is important, and the world is changing very quickly, and there's a lot of stuff coming down the pipeline. I'm not going to get too you know. negative, but there are going to be so many people that need help that suffer from trauma. And it will be an outreach in that way as well.
Okay.
And so that's why another reason I feel in the future. So don't let your fears.
So
you
shouldn't run
you.
For senator to try to. Help,
no,
help that
no.
way? Okay, don't do that.
You're not running for senator. Yeah. Right, sorry, good. Hate
thank
to hate
you.
To.
Thank you.
Put burst your bubble on that, but I don't see that happening.
I might ruin that for you, honey.
Start at the state level.
Also, have you considered writing a book with stories from your patients that you've treated along the way?
You can't really do that.
Ah, too personal.
Cracked is that. Though.
Well, no, it isn't that. It's based
that
on people
fiction.
We've seen. It's yeah. all fictionalized. That's the closest you can get to, you know, what I really did was my feelings about things and
okay.
sort of brought a story to life.
Okay. There might be a part two of that then.
Oh, my goodness. Okay.
There you go.
Okay. Well, okay. Enough about
it's
Drew.
A lot.
If you want to hear more psychic readings with Dr. Drew, you can tune into Calling Out with Susan Pinsky.
Are we done here?
Yeah.
We're done with the reading.
No, but I think we're out of time too.
Yeah, and I wanted Cindy to talk about like where people can find
yes,
her.
Yes, please
and,
do.
Oh, yeah.
And also, what the other thing you do? Like, you travel the world, you study Indonesia and other cultures and mediumship. But she's also on tour in the United States and does many, many shows, which she has coming up.
How about you're such a great guest? How about we all do like a public podcast of some type
of
all these
love
different
that.
Things get involved.
Read, let's do it. I'm in.
Did you go to Mike's thing last night?
No, it was not last night. It was during the week. I did. Yeah, he was great.
No, he played the improv last night.
Oh, Mike Carano.
Yeah,
no,
yeah,
I didn't. We were at something. I was singing okay. I was singing at Staples.
He crushed it, by the way. Check that out, man.
I'm interested in us being inclusive in ideas and sort of, I don't know. I just feel like if we don't sort of broaden out the perspectives and the kinds of people we work with here in this podcast, we're leaving people out.
Yeah.
And so you to me represent sort of another approach. And I think if we did something in a, like in an improv or something, it'd be very interesting.
I'm
very
in.
Interesting.
So, I would love that.
With alcohol though, with sober people?
Yeah, we can do it without. If non-sober people come, they can drink if they want. We don't,
okay,
do.
So
they don't give.
I'll pimp
look
myself
at
out
all
here.
The places you're going.
MusicCityMedium.com, MediumCindyKeza.com. Twitter is at MediumCindyKeza. I've got
New
a
Brunswick,
got a
New Jersey,
little
Alabama.
Tour going on here.
Oh my
and
God, Cindy, look at that.
Booked until December. Yeah. If you want to check out my Diary of a Medium episode
you're playing
one,
the Soho
you can find
House
it on
in New York. That's
I
about
am.
As crazy as a place you can go.
April 13th, Soho House, NYC. So, yeah, I feel very blessed to be able to tour the U.S. like I've been doing.
And she tours many of the clubs across the nation, and she books herself.
I've played Zanies. That's in Nashville.
Zanies is my home club.
There's
a first place that took a real chance on me. I really give props to Zanies because they gave me a residency. I've been there for 2.5 years.
Oh, my God.
They've really been great to me.
TMZ takes pictures of her coming out of Zanies.
Yeah.
And it's not expensive.
Cool.
You just go to these
20
clubs.
Bucks a ticket.
Yeah.
Yeah,
you pay $20. You go in, you can see how she works, and you might get a rating. You never know. And she's really good at her craft and actually funny. It's not just
entertaining.
Serious, sad, and really.
And there's, I believe in it. Here's the thing. My Uncle Woody, who you were describing, you didn't know what his name was in the war, got his foot shot off, was a bartender, alcoholic, and he and my dad were the closest of my dad's 9 brothers. And I loved Uncle Woody. I went to the VA hospital in Pomona and was there when he died. Only
you were raised
only
by
Forrest that went and visited him.
You were raised by cartoon characters.
Woody Forrest.
I mean, it's crazy. It's like I think of the Flintstones or something.
Woody is where I got all my information about women from. He's the one that's coached me.
Woody, of course.
About girls.
Woody.
Nice.
Woody Forrest.
Thank you, Susan. Ladies and gentlemen, my wife.
It's just a self-fulfilling prophecy.
We understand. We get it.
No, but my favorite episode on Calling Out with Susan Pinsky was Rehab Heaven with Bob Forrest and Andy Dick.
Oh,
it's one of my favorite.
Oh, it was fun.
So check it out, because he does have a lot of spirits around him, and he knew a lot of celebrities that actually showed up. It was really, really cool.
All right, we got to wrap this up. Thank you all. Please, again, support everything that we need supported to make this thing happen. And tune in soon for a tour of the three of us out there somewhere.
Let's go. Let's go to Zany's. Awesome. I want to go to Zany's.
Please
do.
Be the mixture, yes.
Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? It's interesting, something about
this. Yeah, Cindy, you rocked it.
Yeah. All right, we'll see you next time.
Thanks for having me.
You bet.
Home is a place. A place to seek, a place I wonder how. When I'm with you, I don't need a lever, I've control. But home.